Hello, everybody. Cal Banyan here. Cal Banyan's Hypnosis, etc. And I am back with my special guest once again, Dr. Reverend Scott Giles. I'm naming him one of the smartest men in the profession of hypnotism, an individual that I admire a lot. We go back a long ways in the profession. And just to give you a quick little rundown, in case you haven't watched the other two videos I've done with him, this is a series of four, just to give you an idea who we're talking to here. Scott is a board-certified chaplain, certified instructor with the National Guild of Hypnotists. He has a hospital-affiliated practice. He's especially well known for his work with hypnotism in the field of working with cancer patients. He has been the affiliated community minister at Countryside Church Unitarian Universalist in Palatine, Illinois since 1991. Scott is a member of the advisory board of the National Guild of Hypnotists. He carries the legislation and governmental concerns portfolio. He is like, for in my mind, the legal liaison between the National Guild of Hypnotists and other organizations and legislative groups and that kind of thing. Scott has received most of the awards offered by the National Guild of Hypnotists, including the top award, the Award for Lifetime Achievement, and that's a Rexford North Award. And he's also got the Ormond Gill Chair Award, another coveted, at least by me, award of the National Guild of Hypnotists. In 2006, the Certification Board of the National Guild of Hypnotists elevated him to the status of Board Certified Diplomate. That's the highest status one can achieve in the National Guild of Hypnotists. There's only 20 diplomates in the National Guild of Hypnotists worldwide. I'm proud to count myself among them. He's a member of the Order of Braid, one of the first inductees into that special honorary society of hypnotism. Scott is awarded, also, he's not just a hypnotist, he's not just a minister. He can also kick butt and a little bit of Taekwondo karate. He is an award-winning second-degree black belt in Taekwondo karate and is currently studying as a swordsman in the Soul Sword tradition. Scott is a former professional chef. He's so well balanced, I'm in awe. And he lives in Wheaton, Chicago with his wife and cats. And he claims that actually the cats are in charge in his home. And you know what, that just shows, you know, you really get to know the nature of individuals by how they treat animals. And I know he loves his cats. If you want to know more after hearing this video, this podcast, go to his website. That's www.giles.org. And thank you so much for being with us, Scott. I'm looking forward to this. We've had two really good episodes so far, and today we're going to extend really a little bit of what we talked about. We talked about the medical environment, and you're going to talk more, I believe, about how the hypnotist can prosper in the medical environment. Is that right?
Absolutely. And Cal, it's great to be back with you. I'm really enjoying doing these podcasts, something new for me, and I really enjoy new stuff. So this has been great.
You know what? You're going to get the bug, and before you know it, you're going to be like me, and you're going to be putting out these cool training videos, you know, periodically like I do.
Well, maybe. We'll see what happens. But as you know, Cal and I are old friends, and even though I'm not a five-pather, I have a great admiration for the five-path system. I routinely recommend it to people who approach me wanting to know how to deepen their work, because it's a coherent, structured system where you don't have a lot of different voices speaking. It's one method. Everything fits together. Everything works. It's a great way to really advance your professionalism as a hypnotist. So I'm glad to be here.
Thank you very much, Scott.
You're most welcome. Well, we're talking today about the opportunities and challenges of working in the medical environment. And, you know, there are the opportunities we've also covered in a previous podcast. You got highly motivated clients, people who are in pain, people who are scared, people who want to get well. They don't resist you. They're not going to be passively aggressive like smokers sometimes are. They're going to come on time for their appointments. They're going to understand they need to pay you. They're going to treat you with great respect, and they're going to say thank you when the work is over. So that's a great opportunity. It's a wonderful way to expand your positive word of mouth. Now, after 25 years in practice, I'm running basically a direct referral practice. People come to me because they're referred. by a past client or by a physician or by a wellness center. But, you know, your word of mouth is the most important thing you have in marketing your practice. You want to protect that. And one of the best ways to get a great word of mouth for yourself is to help people with their medical problems. Because people are not hesitant about telling their friends that, you know, I had a triple bypass, and boy, that hypnotist really made the operation be a lot less scary than it was. They'll tell their friends that, and then word will begin to spread.
People see me looking away from the cameras because I'm writing notes as you're talking, is also, when you work with you help someone with a medical condition, you're part of that treatment team, then that also gives you credibility. I mean, it's like, if you can work in this medical environment, of course you can help them with their stage fright or their bad habit and that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Would you agree
Absolutely.
With that?
Absolutely. They'll often become return clients. So you may help them with, you help them with their surgery, and then a year later they're back because now they want to work on the fear they have of highway driving or whatever. And they'll come to you before they'll come to anyone else because they know you and they trust you. And even if you're going to charge them more than a hypnotist in general practice, that's not going to matter. They know you. They want you. You have credibility. So it's really a great way.
Well, when they talk about you to their friends and family members, that they're saying, well, he helped me with this medical problem. They'll say, gosh, do you think he would be able to help me with fill in the blank? And they'll say, oh, gosh, if he could help me with this, I'm pretty sure he could help you with that, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And after a while, you'll start to develop people who, even after their medical condition is over, they still want to see you to work on other issues and will come back on a regular basis. I've got a whole pile of clients who see me once a month. It's almost like, they go get a massage once a month. They come see their hypnotist once a month for a tune-up and a touch-up, and helps prevent them from getting sick again, perhaps, and keeps the stress under control. And as the trusting relationship grows, they share more with you, and then you become really a more effective part of their world, a tool they use to meet the challenges of their business, their family relationships, and even their spiritual life.
It's kind of like a mind massage.
There you go. No one ever says I've had too many massages, So you shouldn't say I've had too many hypnotic sessions. It's a wellness skill, too.
That's right. I've had people, they come to me with I call it a laundry list of things they want to work on. And I just say, okay, out of all these things, what will we have success with is going to have the greatest positive effect on your life. That's where we'll start. When that's done, then we'll continue to move on down the list, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Cool.
Okay, now some other things, though, about the challenges of the medical community, of medical work, too. I think that they're also equally real and equally important. First, the issue of money. Some clients are going to be tapped out. They've paid the deductible and coinsurance on their health care. They're on disability. They may not have the resources to be able to afford working with a hypnotist in a one-on-one session. So I often recommend that if you're going to do this work and you don't want your heart to break, have a low-cost option for people to get some help from you that they can afford. So in addition to my practice here, where I work intensively with people one-on-one at this office, I also maintain 3 free clinics at hospitals and wellness centers in an arc around Chicago, where I work with 75 cancer patients a month for free. All they have to do is register with the center. I show up there on Saturday morning and we do a group session. And, that sometimes those people will become private clients, but on the whole, if they're coming in that setting, they stay in that setting. But I have a way of helping every single cancer patient who comes to me, even if they're broke. So that's my way of dealing with the issue of financial accessibility. If you can't afford me one-on-one in private sessions, I still got something for you. So I can help them, and my heart doesn't break. I still feel good about the work that I do. So that's something you do have to face. There are practical limitations.
And I'm thinking that also adds so much to your credibility in the community, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But there are other restrictions, too. Like most people have a policy, and I do, too. I charge for appointments canceled on less than 24 hours' notice. On the other hand, you got to be flexible about that if you're working with people in medical with medical problems. Someone on chemotherapy doesn't know how they're going to feel until they get up that morning. They may be able to make their appointment, but they may just be too sick to come. So you got to be able to give them some grace and have some flexibility about that. Enforce the discipline where needed, but also have some flexibility. In fact, if you don't, they'll come to your office when they're too sick to be there. And I actually had a client with hepatitis C throw up in my office because he just couldn't prevent it. Now, in hepatitis C, all body fluids are contagious. So he tried to run from my office to get outside, and he didn't make it. He turned all of my rugs into class 3 medical waste. So, you know, if they're too sick to come, you don't want them to come. You really want to have ways of letting them stay home when they need to. So, but that's something you have to pay attention to.
Right.
Another thing is you're going to have to do your own internal work. You're going to be working with people who are in bad shape in many cases, who are very ill, who are very frightened, are very upset, and you got to keep that energy from contaminating your energy, or you're going to go home at the end of the day and you're going to be depressed and upset and, you know, not a good partner for your spouse. So you need
and
to have
also
done your
thinking
own
about
work
it,
or
if suffering. They've had their own medical challenges, or they've lost a parent to a certain, to cancer or something like that, and then they're around this kind of issue all the time, they really need to have done their personal work so that that is behind them, or it's going to resonate in their face every day at work, right?
Absolutely. And keep your spirituality out of it. You focus on your client's needs. If you believe in past lives, that's great for you, but your client may not. Don't put that out there as the solution to their problem. If you sincerely believe in a Christian heaven, that's great for you, but that may not. But looking forward to a better life in heaven may not be what your client needs to hear from you. So you keep your stuff on your side of the transaction, and you focus on your client and meet your client's needs. That's another important challenge in working effectively with medical issues.
Do you find that it's a challenge? Obviously, people who have cancer, a certain percentage are going to die, and that sometimes people new into the medical profession, that especially not medical profession, but working in a medical environment, that take like your courses or get into this in one way or another, have trouble dealing with that. And if so, how do they manage it? How do they get over that problem?
Well, this is going to be an issue. When you start working with this, you are going to get, if you are working with, say, a changing medical problem that also could be life-threatening, a percentage of your clientele are going to die. One year, in fact, it was over the Christmas break, one two-week period, I had 25% of my practice die. So I had a 25% contraction of my client load in a two-week period because they died. Now, that created a business problem for me also, but it created a personal problem. I cared about these people. We had a good rapport. So, you know, you got to be able to cope with that. And what I do is in working with my own spiritual director, is I have created kind of an internal personal spiritual discipline that I do so that I keep myself protected, my heart protected as I do this work. And I view the work I do as meeting people where they are with what they need to the extent that I can provide it, but I'm not responsible for fixing them. That's between them and the higher power. And so that's something you have to do. And that can be one of the most challenging experiences of working with medical clients.
Perfect. Hey, I don't want to get you too much off topic, but as you're talking about this, I'm thinking about, you know, people who are, you know, trying to, not people, in general, but hypnotists in particular, who are, you know, they've got all their eggs into this one basket. They're going to be professional hypnotists. That's where their livelihood is at. And it seems like, you know, we've got this huge baby boomer population moving through, and there's going to be a call for a lot of medical help in the next 20 years because the baby boomers now are in that 55 to 75 year old range, and it seems like being able to integrate what you do in your practice as much into the medical community or medical practice as possible, it just makes good sense business-wise.
Absolutely. And it's a wide variety of medical problems, too. And the boomers, which I'm one, they have an openness to hypnotic technology. You know, we went through the 60s together, and, you know, we turned on, we tuned in, we dropped out. We know that the mind's a powerful thing. And so hypnotism is very compatible with that. And, you know, major problems, sure, we all have them as we will get older in terms of our medical profile, but minor problems as well. We're seeing more and more of the boomers with hearing loss, with tinnitus. Hypnosis is great for relieving tinnitus by distracting their attention away from the ringing in the ears. Chronic pain that comes from osteoarthritis is a big issue as well. And the boomers tend to be health-oriented. Exercise motivation, that sort of thing, can be a really important facet of a hypnotic practice as well. So, you know, as the boomer population ages, our market is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. As we said in the first of these podcasts, we're at the beginning of a wonderful time in hypnotism. We're at the right place at the right time.
I totally believe you. Cool. What else you got for us?
Well, I guess the other thing I want to say about if you're going to be working in the medical environment is keep your ego under control. You're going to be working with medical doctors and highly educated professionals, and you know they've long since asked their hospitals for continuing education about complementary and alternative medicine. So they know about us to some degree. And if you show up and if you've got one of these distance learning PhDs that are not accredited in hypnotherapy and stuff, and you put that out there when you're going to be in the medical environment, they're going to know it's not an academic degree, and you're going to lose all respect. So don't be proud of what you are as a hypnotist. Take joy in the effectiveness of the methods that we have for helping people, but do not try to compete with the medical provider or think of yourself as someone who can do what they can do, because that's not going to work.
Yeah, and as you're talking about that, I'm thinking, you know, we need to be humble, you know, not egotistical, professional, confident, and honest, especially about our credentials.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I've talked about over and over and over again, you know, we have got to educate our profession against these non-accredited, unreal PhD programs, as they call them, or, you know, by any other name. These people, when you get into a medical environment or a psychological environment, these people have earned their bachelor's degrees, their master's degrees, their PhDs. They know what those credentials mean, their MDs, and so on. Nurses have earned their degrees and licensure and physical therapist occupation, and you go in with some kind of alternative degree and you hurt yourself and you hurt our profession at large. I mean, that's my belief on that, and I've never heard a good counter argument to it. You know, if you want a degree, go get yourself a bachelor's degree in counseling or nursing or something like that. You end with a licensure, and then that's a wonderful credential to do. Way better than having one of these flimsy PhDs, quote PhDs.
I agree completely.
Good. All right. We're running out of time. You want to wrap that up for us there, Scott?
Well, I just want to say that there are opportunities and challenges of working in the medical environment. But the opportunities outweigh the challenges. And if you meet those challenges, learning to deal with your own stuff, your own understanding of suffering, you expand your own training, you keep your ego under control, you make yourself a better person and a better professional too. So it's well worth doing.
Very good. Hey, and for you folks out there, if you want to get more information on working in the medical environment, I recommend, you know, keep an eye on Scott's website, csgiles.org. He has programs that come up in the future. He's also, you can get recordings of his talks from the National Guild of Hypnotists Convention over the last few years. And, you know, just continue to educate yourself. I personally have never been crazy about working in the hospital environment. When I was getting a master's degree, I worked in the North Dakota State Hospital for a year, and I just didn't like it. And I'm much happier in the kind of environment I am now. But some of you, I mean, that's just, you were just built for that. And so pursue it and find out if it's right for you. And if so, I highly recommend that you go for it. It's a great credential no matter what you're doing. Okay, I've got a class coming up in October, Hypno Oktoberfest, sort of. And it's going to be the National Guild of Hypnotists recognized Banyan Hypnosis, Hypnosis Hypnotherapy Certification Super Course. It starts looking over at my calendar here, runs through the 13th through the 24th with the weekend off. That's the 18th and the 19th, so you're here in Southern Cal anyway. Go ahead and go to Disneyland or something like that. If you can't make it out here physically, of course, our classes are offered live, online, interactive. If you've got a good internet connection, a good computer, and you can look at that as an option. Give us a call. All right, that's it. I'm looking forward to doing one more episode with Scott Giles. We're going to do it on forgiveness, and this is going to be interesting in a very big way, because I think that we have two overlapping but yet different perspectives on the forgiveness process, but we both agree that it can be vital to changing yourself in a positive way. All right, that's it. Cal Banyan signing off.
This recording is the property of Cal Banyan and the Banyan Hypnosis Center for Training and Services, Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without permission. For contact information, go to www.hypnosiscenter.com.